If you like random,
I see sinners in a church.
Lots of shenanigans and all of the topics and not so random special guests and interviews. Tune in Tuesday night, 7:30 to 9 p.m. on
98.1
for your weekly random rendezvous with
story of never ending.
Reza,
your introversion legend.
RaglanRadio.com. Check out the live stream.
On a journey of what it takes to be.
Kia ora ta to everyone. Good evening on this quite rainy Tuesday night, April the 16th, 2024. It's 6 past 8. I'm late. Fashionably late. But for German, really disappointingly late. For those of you who are like, but what's she on about? She did her new slot show on Monday. Why is she in again, for fuck's sake? Well, it's just, you know, it's dark and miserable out there and there's not much to do. Well, kind of not true. There's heaps to do in this beautiful little town on a Tuesday night. But I felt like I had so much fun with Neil yesterday. But also listening to his songs meant I couldn't really play much of mine. Dude just took over. So rude. Little funky monkey Neil, son of Anthony Dolan. Oh, that's what I call him from now on. Oh, that was fun. And then I was like, you know what? Why that slot isn't filled and I got nothing much else on her Tuesday night, and she'll just come in. And the actual idea for this show is to do something from 8:30 till 9:30. That is a bit like, what did Tori once call it? Reza after dark? Meaning, for those of you who know shows that are called like that, it's getting a little bit more explicit. It's maybe PG-13. And I was like, oh yeah, I can talk about sexy things. And maybe some explicit content. So if you're not ready for that, if you don't want to hear any of that, then now's your time to listen to something else. Other than that, here we go. I'm going to read a little bit out of a book that is called King Stories, which is about King Stories. Surprise! And yeah, I was just thinking about a friend of mine's writing a book currently and, you know, thinking about, oh, what makes a good story a good story? And what is the juiciness of it when it's about sex or relationships? And I've read a lot of those books, like coming of age stories when I was in my 20s. God, it's a long time ago. And I feel like at some point it's about shocking. It needs to be shocking and like a little bit, nobody's ever written anything like this before. For those of you who are German out there, might have remember Charlotte Roche. She wrote Feuchtgebiete. What is Feuchtgebiete in English? Wetlands. Yeah, wetlands. And you know, if you know what she means by wetlands. And that book was highly controversial about 15 years ago when she wrote it. You know, she was very explicit about how this girl who's a little bit troubled falls with her butthole first on a chair and then has a fissure. So, you know, her fissure, her butt broke. And yeah, you know, some of that stuff and the way she explained in almost disgusting detail how she had sex was just a little bit gross, but also you couldn't stop reading and you would hide the cover in the U-Bahn because you knew everybody knows this book and what it's about. So, but nowadays I feel like I don't think that would be much of a, oh my God, situation. Maybe in this country, because I think New Zealand is a little bit more prude. Don't get me wrong. Love you guys. Love being in this country. Love that you're having me. But there's a little bit of conservative prudishness that I, for example, don't really associate with. And let's talk about it. I was trying for like 5 or 6 people to come in today and they didn't. But hey, I can just talk to myself as I do most of the time anyway. So that's fine. But let's start with a song. A song that I looked for 2 days because I couldn't remember the artist or the lyrics or what the song was called. So I scrolled through my 1,800 liked songs until I found it. I'm very glad I did. Here's Carmody with Like That.
I want to go where new lovers go in their own poetry. Get undressed in front of you, still feel you watching me. And they say that the hunger fades the more our souls collide. I will always ache for you, I won't let that go by. And I drag you out like the tide pulls on the sea. Could you be forever engulfed by me? Like that, can you love me like that? Wrap around me like that. I always need you like that. Like that, can you love me? So could never write you out. I will never tire of hearing those words as they leave your mouth. I want to sing, 'cause you'll make me feel like someone's watching over me. And right here is all I need. Could we lie?
That was Carmody with Like That. It's such a beautiful, 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 beautiful song. And I thought it's quite fitting to do a bit more quiet tunes today if we talk about, you know, sexy things. I mean, it's so much easier to talk with somebody about it. But at the end of the day, I like to hear myself talk most of the time. And, you know, it'll be okay. So, as I've been saying, talking about, you know, novels or fiction that incorporate sex or topics that are a bit more intense, there is a platform at the Auckland Writers Festival that is happening 14th till 19th of May, and I'm definitely going. I have a few things that I want to see. And one thing I'm going to see is Let's Get Physical, The Importance of Horny Stories. It's 11:30 to 12:30 for those of you who want to go on a Saturday, the 18th of May. And here's the description for it. In Aotearoa, New Zealand, award-winning playwright Nathan Joe, Scenes from a Yellow Peril, commented that, "I always find myself drawn back towards smut and sexuality, the feeling of horniness as well as horny representation." Halfway across the earth in Scotland, poet and author Kay Patrick, Mrs. S, similarly said, "Sexuality can also be expressed in a really intense and sudden and electrifying way. That's why I started using the word horny instead of erotic." And away from the literature world, Elena Ashambayewa Storio advocates for more conversations and sex positive stories around pleasure. Ockham NZ Book Awards shortlisted writer Pip Adam Audition sits down with these three storytellers to investigate the empowering nature of writing sex, representing queer joy, and why we should all be reading more smut. Please be advised that this session will contain mature content. And it's not that expensive. Early bird is 23 and standard is 28. So I'm hopefully going to be an early bird. I need to actually do my ticket stuff. Yeah, I do believe that the same that applies for outfits and movies and anything that has to do with sexuality, especially when it comes to sexuality for women or queer people, it shouldn't be such a taboo, you know? When men pride themselves fucking around, that's great, and they talk about it and it's awesome. But if women do it, it's like, you're a slut, you're a bitch. Well, I say proudly, oh yeah, I've been slutting around the last couple months. You know, that's a good thing. That's like owning your sexuality. But I do think that there's a lot to be done, not just in this country, but in general. I remember when I lived in the States 22 years ago, every time I say something of 20 something years, I'm like, oh my God, I feel so old. My host family, for example, was appalled that me and my family would go to the nude beaches, because in East Germany it was such a thing as, we called it free body culture, which meant you can wear togs if you want to, but if you don't want to, that's fine too. And the thing is, what it made me realize, I am raised in a very, I'm very comfortable with my naked body. I'm comfortable around other naked bodies. And here comes the big thing. Listen, you guys, write it down. It's nothing sexual. The naked body itself, as we're born, like fucking Adam and Eve, is nothing sexual. That's just a body. What makes it a sexual thing and what makes it problematic is that people say, oh, but that's disgusting. You knowing what your parents look like naked, that's fucking disgusting. And I'm like, no, that you say it's disgusting is disgusting, because you make our bodies a sexual thing, which they're definitely not. Unless you use them for sexual things, and then that's fine. But, you know, nude beaches are not for fucking around. They're for going for a swim and getting a nice tan without those stupid tog lines. That's all it is. So, yeah, that's basically my summer holidays. And a lot of people just look at you all weird and be like, oh, that's... And also, nude beach has nothing to do with nudist camps or nudist living arrangements, you know? I would still put on something if I'd go to the car or the next little shop to sell me things, you know, or wear a t-shirt so I don't get fucking burned. So it's not, you live naked all the time. It's just, yeah. Also, the feeling of wet togs on my skin, hate it. Also get bladder infections all the time if I keep my wet togs on. So I'm just saying, it's just healthier. Anywho, the topic today, Reza After Dark. We'll see what happens. I'm going to read you a King story, or maybe parts of it, from a book that I got from a friend of mine. And I'm not going to say that friend's name, because then people, you know, I don't want people to be judgy fuckers. But before we do that, let's listen to another tune. We just had Carmody with Like That. epic song, and here's Sylvanessa with Play It Right.
When the sounds come together so close to my face, it's no wonder we wonder what's taking place. Oh, I feel like an animal in the night. Play it right, play it right. Devotion, I would be more than a small human with her head pressed against your mouth in motion. Play it right, play it right.
Sylvanessa with Play It Right. Great song, great band in general. I feel like there's almost... Yeah, I don't know if there's a song that I don't like from them. Okay, I'm going to read you some... I'm going to read you an excerpt of the... I'm just going to put my legs up the table like a boss bitch. So the book's called King Stories. Here on 98.1 FM, Regden Community Radio. It's Reza After Dark. It's 8:30. This is PJ 13, I'd say. Maybe 16. Put your kids to bed if you don't want them to hear it. If you have kids that are listening to my show, which I doubt in general. So the book is described, Kink as a dynamic anthology of literary fiction that opens an imaginative door into the world of desire. The stories within portray love, longing, BDSM, and sexual kinks in all their glory from some of today's most celebrated and acclaimed writers. And then names all the writers. While there are whips and chains, sure, the true power of these stories lies in their beautiful, moving dispatches from across the sexual spectrum of interests. This subversive and daring anthology celebrates desire with a bold new vision that surprises and delights. And as I was saying earlier, the books that I read in my 20s that were like such a massive thing of the way they were wrote and the way it was very intense and very daring and also very disgusting, you know, for me as a 20-something-year-old. And nowadays I'm like, what do people need to write to make it daring or to make it surprising? Like, what would surprise me to read in a book that it's about desire and sex? So anyways, the first story The Cure by Melissa Phoebos. And she was talking about that she went on a date with a woman for the first time. And because I can very much relate to that of dating women and what that brings on the table. So she left the restaurant upset, at first at her date, then herself. Even when she found a romantic prospect, why did it feel like her intrigues were always a few inches off the mark? They wanted her too much or not enough, and occasionally both. It is difficult to gauge one's own desire when one is calibrated to the desire of others. She had not even particularly wanted to have sex with her date, though she would have. She had just wanted her date to want her, to mistake that pleasure, even briefly, for desire. As she walked home from the restaurant, she thought of something her therapist had once said to her. You can't get enough of a thing you don't need. She had rolled it around her mind for years, tugging at the riddle of its meaning, testing it against every kind of unhappiness. She couldn't get enough movie popcorn because it was terrible for her. She couldn't get enough episode of the BBC crime dramas because they were an escape. She couldn't get enough money by working overtime because she already had enough money. She couldn't get enough approval from a boss whom she despised because she did not respect him. She couldn't get thin and fit enough because she still aspired to an absurd patriarchal idea of female beauty. She couldn't get enough attention from a woman she wasn't really that attracted to because why should she crave it? These desires were insatiable because no need could be met. Like fire, they grew when fed. Not for the first time, she felt disgusted by how oriented she was to the interests and esteem of others. She enjoyed sex most when her lover seemed satisfied. There was, of course, nothing wrong with this, except that it was to the exclusion of her own satisfaction. That is, her satisfaction was almost entirely contingent on her partner's pleasure. She had once read about a study that found lesbians to have an outrageously greater number of orgasms during sex than the heterosexual woman. This gave her a self-satisfied zing of pleasure, as if she'd given a correct answer on a game show. The reason offered for this was that women are socialized to be oriented to their partner's pleasure rather than their own. Isn't that the truth, ladies? I can totally relate to that. Reading this, her satisfaction dwindled. It was great that lesbians had co-opted the instinct for their own gain. However, inadvertently, but still, it depressed her to understand that women cultivated this instinct for men. Her whole life seemed defined by unfulfillable desires, by the effort to satisfy the interests of parties she didn't even care for. I'm going to pause there for a bit and play another song. I'm pretty sure, I mean, I cannot say I'm pretty sure, but I can definitely relate to that. You want to be desired by someone or something that you don't really care about because you're so made up of the stories around sex in society and what you're supposed to desire and how your desire is supposed to work. Yeah, so that's the first bit. I'm just checking how long this is because I remember this being quite short. Yeah, I can totally read this whole thing and this... In this show, we have another half hour or so. I'm not sure if I stay out to 9:30 because I'm pretty damn tired. But let's play some music. Come back. Oh, let's do this really calm song. Here's Sigur Rós, Untitled number 3 from the album Samskæti. Also, you don't know Sigur Rós, an Icelandic band. Very cosmic post-rock creations, and if they sing, which they don't always do, I don't think in that one they do, it's a made-up language. It's not even Icelandic. It's a made-up language. Can you fucking imagine? Sigur Rós, you guys. love about this song is the intensity and how it gets into this big explosive thing and then quiets down again, and it takes more than a minute to quiet down. So that's Sigur Rós with Samskaiti. And that's their made-up language, because it's not even Icelandic. And I remember using that song because I had to draw some Kandinsky shit in art school, well, in art class in high school. It's like, choose a piece of music that you like and then paint like fucking Kandinsky. And for those of you who don't know, Kandinsky is like a Russian... Oh, fuck. Is he futuristic? Man, I don't even want to say the wrong thing. Russian painter, but very abstract. Abstract. Yes, abstract. That's the one. I didn't want a futuristic or anything. Yeah, so very abstract, just like a lot of rectangles and circles and lines, and doesn't really look like anything. So yeah, I chose that song and then did like a, I don't know, not much, because I hated art in school. I loved art theory, but not the painting. So that's my little story to this song. And now let's get back to King stories. You're listening to Reza After Dark on Raglan Community Radio 98.1. And I'm listening, I'm reading you a story from King Stories. And I started with this lady dating a woman and explaining what the situation is with wanting to be desired and desire and questioning all that and not really feeling like she wants her, but she wants to be wanted. Anyhow, when she got home from the failed date, she called her best friend to complain. "I've run out of lesbians," she announced. "You have not run out of lesbians," said her friend. "You are tired of pursuing the wrong lesbians." "I called you for sympathy," she said. "I didn't call you for the truth." "You have to stop looking for your self-esteem in a lover," said the friend, over a mouthful of something crunchy. "If I wanted this kind of advice," she said, "I would have called my therapist." "Are you eating a carrot?" "A pickle. I think you should just go use someone." "Like for sex?" "Mm-hmm." More crunching. "Make it about you. Text an old college friend. Tell him to come fuck you. It will make you feel better." "I'm gay," she reminded the friend. Oh, sorry. So it wasn't her first dating experience. "So what?" said the friend. "If I remember correctly, you're capable of enjoying sex with men. All the better to participate, not caring about his feelings. You can stop if you don't like it." Was that true? One of the things that she remembered about sleeping with men was that it was hard to stop, even if you didn't like it. Inexplicable. Oh my God, I swear I'm not drunk. Inexplicably, it usually seemed easier to continue than to stop. Oh, amen to that. Well, inexplicably to hear then. One of the gifts of no longer sleeping with men was that she became capable of seeing clearly many terrible truths of it. It was easier to just keep fucking them, because then you wouldn't have to emotionally clean up afterwards. It was easier to keep fucking them than to find out how awful they might be when sexually thwarted, a potential she had learned was hard to overestimate. Masculinity was a glass vase perpetually at the edge of the table. In high school, she had once made out with a soccer jock at a party. She'd never had sex with a man and didn't want him to be her first. After she rebuffed him, he spread rumor about the sex they'd had, alleging that she had made some bizarre erotic requests of him. It was a cruel and transparent reversal of his own rejection. Still, those details followed her for the rest of high school. She had been a relatively unknown character at the school, and thus too many became defined by those humiliating fabrications. She knew it could have been worse. When a childhood friend had halted a sexual exchange with a boy, she had been raped. For the last 15 years, she had somewhat smugly considered herself free from the bondage of pleasing men. But if she was really honest about it, she had often had sex with women when she didn't feel like it too. It suddenly seemed clear that she was not free from the instinct to please men. She had just opted out of having sex with them, mostly by virtue of the fact that she simply preferred sex with women. like those people who took drugs that prevented other more harmful drugs from working. It didn't cure their addictive behaviors. It just rendered the one option impotent. One had to learn how to not do a thing to really be free of it, she thought. Even though there were hardly any men in her life, she still functioned in ways designed to privilege their pleasure, like craving the desire of people she didn't like and caring about every orgasm but her own. She truly undid this instinct, extracted it at the root, perhaps she would really get free. She texted an old college friend and invited him to come over. While she waited, she imagined explaining this to her therapist and knew that her therapist would find it a very bad idea. Luckily, it was August when all the therapists in New York City go on vacation, and she wouldn't have to explain until September, which seemed a long time away. Okay, so that sounds like she's definitely going to fuck just some random guy, and we'll see how that goes after the next song. Yes, this is Reza, Tuesday night. Let's not call it Rendezvous with Reza, because that's now on Monday night, 7 till 8:30. This is Reza After Dark. We're doing some explicit content here, guys, so send your kids to bed. I'm reading out of a King Stories book. And here's a very old song from the Shakespeare Sisters, Stay.
If this world is wearing thin and you're thinking of escape, I'll go anywhere with you. Just wrap me up in chains. But if you try to go alone, don't think I'll understand. Stay with me. Stay. Of your room, in the darkness of your dreams, you must only think of me. There can be no in between. When your pride is on the floor, I'll make you.
Stay with me.
Yeah, I love that beat. Hey, it's a really old song from the Shakespeare Sisters. Stay. I'm thinking 80s, but let me verify that for sure. It's 1992. Well, still feels like a lifetime ago, that one. Hey, you're listening to Reza, Reza After Dark, Tuesday night. It's 8:45. I'm very comfy here on the chair, putting my feet up and reading you from the King stories about a woman who was dissatisfied with her date with another woman and is now trying to fuck a dude. So let's see how that turns out. I have a feeling. He had not been a pretty child, she knew from pictures. Gangly with incongruent features, and she could already see that he would not age well. He had thin lips and pale skin and dark hair that was already receding, but he was tall and broad-shouldered with strong cheekbones and a pretty cock. She knew that the window of time during which she had known him would be one in which he was beautiful. He was a nice guy, she'd always thought, by which she meant that he wasn't terrible. He had arrived on her doorstep 20 minutes after she had texted him, an impressive time to travel from Williamsburg to Bedstuy on foot. Had he run? She imagined it and laughed and didn't explain as she led him into her apartment. Are you hungry? She asked him. Normally she didn't ask visitors this, especially this late, but the fact of her intention to use him for sex seemed to demand a compensatory performance of consideration for his exploited body. To her surprise, he said yes, he was hungry. She had very little food in the apartment, having been out of town. She took a veggie burger out of the freezer and put it on a plate. She would have microwaved it for herself, but she took out a small frying pan and dripped some oil into it. As a cook, she told him about her failed date. A few months earlier, she had lunched with him. They had enjoyed the same attraction as ever, and she had not considered having sex with him. Now he stood in the room and that served as her kitchen and living room and office, and she thought, sure, she would fuck him, and if she didn't like it, she would stop. He was not a good kisser. As they backed toward her bed, she wondered if fucking a man would be similar to watching porn featuring men, which she sometimes did. That is, would she want to disappear him the instant she came? When masturbating to porn, she often closed the laptop before orgasm had even completed its arc. Nothing was more grim than pornography post-orgasm. His cock was not grim, thankfully. It was shapely and hard, and she liked the feeling of it on her thigh as he sucked on her nipple. There was a thrill as he penetrated her, owing in some part to novelty. Within a couple of minutes, however, it became the familiar tedium of being thrust upon. She knew what came next, and it was not her. Still, she dutifully turned over onto her hands and knees and let him fuck her from behind. It took a good 5 minutes for her to realize that she was waiting for it to be over. It took another 5 for her to work up the gumption to tell him to stop mid-thrust. But then, before she could speak, he sputtered to a finish, and there was no need. She wanted him to leave afterward, but he seemed to assume that he would be staying over, and she was very sleepy. When he curled up against her as Big Spoon, she scooted into him. This was a position she was used to, having been shorter than all of her past sleeping partners. But those people had been women. His size made her feel claustrophobic and overheated. His body had prickled her unpleasantly, and his profusion of sweat repulsed her. A person only wants to be drenched in the sweat of someone she loves, and not always then. With a calculated shifting, she nudged him away from her, and eventually he yielded, content to press his face into her shoulder. His breath shuddered against her neck, slightly congested, like that of a child. In the morning, she dressed for work, and together they walked to the cafe before parting ways, each with a coffee in hand. She kissed him on the cheek, pretended not to see the moony look on his face, and walked purposefully toward the train. Confirming that he was out of view, she strode past the station and walked home. It was her day off. When she closed the apartment door behind her, the pleasure of solitude was so great that she closed her eyes and leaned back against the door with a vocal sigh. She drank a glass of water and made her bed, her bedroom having been intruded upon by his ungainly presence. Felt sanctified in his absence. She took off her clothes and lay on the taut blanket. She did not watch pornography. She thought about stopping him as soon as the sex became boring to her. She thought about stopping the moment it became an exercise in placation. The orgasm was deep and silent, the kind that opens a room in the body and then fills it with light. When he called that afternoon, she surprised herself by inviting him over. He was eager again, like a dog before dinner, standing too close, mouth open. He commented on his hunger without prompting, but this time she didn't feed him. She handed him a glass of water and walked into the bedroom. They kissed for a few minutes. He had not learned how to kiss in the previous 12 hours. She thought about instructing him, something she remembered doing with men in the past. She decided not to perform the surgical tech required to teach him without offending his pride. This decision excited her. She turned her head away from his mouth and pressed her pelvis against him. When she mounted him, it was exciting for only a couple minutes. "I'm going to stop this," she thought. "If he complains," she thought, "I will never speak to him again." He didn't complain. She climbed off him and walked into the kitchen. She returned with a glass of water. He was still on the bed. He reached out his hand for her or the glass, it was unclear. She gulped the water. "I'm done," she said, not unkindly. "You should go." In college, she worked for years as a professional dominatrix. One of the activities that her clients routinely asked for was teasing and denial. This usually meant a very slow hand job. Sometimes she would tie up her clients and pretend she was going to deny them an orgasm. Sometimes she would make them do it with their own hand. "Stop," she shouted them, "go." But she always, or almost always, let them come at the end. She considered whether this had anything in common with that and decided that it didn't. Like all of the things she did as a dominatrix, from inflated balloons to sensory deprivation to face spitting, it was prescribed by the desires of her clients. Her interest in her old college friend was the opposite. It was the prioritization of her own pleasure that she found surprisingly erotic. She had imagined this exercise, this counter-instructual conditioning, as a kind of work, as that year she'd spent during college was work. She had not imagined that it would be pleasurable, that she would be driven more by her own pleasure than by any abstract objective. After he left, she walked slowly around her apartment, observing it as a stranger would. She sipped her glass of water and touched her books, photography on the wall, the dishes dried in the rack beside the sink. She put herself to bed as gently, as lovingly as if she were her own child. She ran her hands softly over every inch of her body as if she were washing it. This orgasm was a veil that drew over her, and when it ended, she was asleep. The third time he was anxious, sulky, his narrow mouth drawn like a tightened stitch. He was leaving the next day, he informed her. She did not feed him. She did not give him a glass of water. She told him to lie on the floor and touch himself. She lay on the sofa where he only had a partial view of her. "Stop," she said. Then she masturbated to climax, not caring or even thinking about what noises she might be making. Afterward, she could feel him there, shimmering with desire and frustration. His frustration was not a problem for her to fix, though that idea rung familiar, like a song wafting from the window of a passing car. She sat up and looked at him, there on the floor, with his cock in his hand. He was the last man she would ever have fucked. He wouldn't call once he left, she thought. Or maybe he would call incessantly. She didn't care. Her not caring was voluptuous, sensual. It was a most substantial absence. It filled her like a good meal. She had had enough. So that was the story The Cure by Melissa Phoebus, talking about how a lesbian woman is pretty sad about her lesbian dating and then just fucks a boy. And I think, so, you know, every story in this book is different, and I might read another one next week. What I think resonated with me a lot was the whole, as a woman, you just keep going, even if none of what is happening right there is pleasant or even remotely fun. And you're just like, ugh, let's just get it over with, you know, let him have his fun. And I think as women, we're so conditioned to please, you know, please as a mother, please as a daughter, please as a partner. Yeah, so you're just like, it's fine. At least one of us has fun. And owning that, as she does in this book, by saying, you know what? I just don't give a shit about your pleasure. Your pleasure is your problem. My pleasure is my problem. And we both shall sort it. And I'm not saying that if you're in a loving relationship, you don't want to please someone else. Obviously you are. But in this situation, it's like, don't care. Suit yourself. It's 8:55 already. So I'm going to do a little song. And then, yeah, wrap it up shortly. This is kind of a rendezvous with Reza after dark, I would say. Just covering my old shift, dare I say, although the actual rendezvous is on Monday. But yeah, I just felt like it. Just felt like doing something. Oh, here's another old song, a bit gloomy and sad, but pretty epic. Pretty epic sound. This is Archive with End of Our Days.
Holding me down, I can't believe I am drowning somehow. Fall to my knees, I need peace from the sounds. Sounds are deceiving my love of your pain. Look to the crowd, searching for something to turn us around. Love never hides when it wants to be found. All we can know is this has to be now. Say you've never seen something so beautiful.
Till the end of our days.
See, I was singing along, so I completely forgot to press pause. It was one of the songs that I really love to sing along, and I'm like, oh, I'm sure there must be some easy guitar chords where I can do this. So anyways, this is a great song. It was Archive, End of Our Days, also from the 90s, I'd say. Oh, 2015, almost the 90s, basically. But yeah, great song. It's 9:01, and we did a little bit of a different thing here with Rendezvous with Reza. That usually is now Monday, but I used my old slot until someone else was going to take over. And we did a little bit of a, shall we say, Reza After Dark. I wonder, hey, there's always people complaining on the notice board about people parking shit or people being, you know, not saying thank you and please on the notice board and, you know, all those really awful things that are happening in the world right now. They're all happening on the regular notice board. So I'm always wondering, hey, do people complain about stuff like me reading from this kink book, a sex story on air at 9:00 in the evening? I don't know. People could, you know, make it a big massive thing of why that's a problem. But maybe it's also nobody listens to this. So I can do whatever the fuck I want to do. Ugh, that's so fun. And I know that my Berlin peeps will definitely not mind. Anyhow, I think I've had enough for the day. I definitely need to go sleep. So we'll see what happens next week. I'm definitely doing the Monday show and maybe the Tuesday show. Just see how I feel. I also think there needs to be other things happening in my life than radio. So I shall try that for tomorrow to do something different. And we're going to do, oh yeah, we're going to do, like, you know, keep the cozy, comfy, sexy vibe. Talking about sobriety. Twist in My Sobriety from Tanita Tikaram. I see you all next week. Well, I hear you all next week. Have a lovely night. Pomarie.
Nervous people, people have